you can check out the archive section. I've just got to inform everybody of this. You know how I do the webcam version of the show every day, but you can go to directly to the YouTube channel to access those. Well, I'm now posting those YouTube videos for the shows that we do in the archive section of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. So you can go there, and there is the short video clip of the show for the day. If we have two guests, I usually split the video up into two of the separate hours. So if you want to listen to one guest but not the other, you can. As well as, of course, the whole show lacking in commercials and lacking in music, really, because of the copyrights and what have you. So you can save a lot of time listening to it, as well as you can see me and, in some cases, the guests on webcam. And if not there, we've got the other pictures of them. And I must admit, the production quality isn't the, you know, highest, shiniest things that you'd expect to see with a giant team. It's because I'm doing it all by myself. But still, it's all there. It's all free. And I hope everybody enjoys that, because I've noticed that I've been getting some donations. I've noticed that people have been subscribing for $5 a month, and some people have been subscribing for $20 a month and been giving me a little monthly donation of that magnitude. And I wanted to do something extra for you. So what I did yesterday with Andrew Bashago and Bernie Mendez is we had a three-hour conversation after the show with some of the listeners who had the opportunity to ask these guys questions of their own. And we recorded that all, and it's now on the ad-free section of the archives of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you want to access those, you subscribe for between $5 and $20 a month. Doesn't matter, whatever you can afford. And I'll send you the link to that. And again, it's commercial-free. So I'm trying to pump out huge quantities of content every single day. And I can guarantee you, if you spent your time only listening to the media produced on the show, not only would it be time well spent, but it would be quite a lot of time, enough time to essentially blag out and boycott all the other sources of news and information that you're listening to, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because all different people who have all different pieces of news and information get suggested by the listeners and come on the show. That's what I'm doing, man. Just want to provide everybody with what they want and what they need in a nice, happy, friendly, fun format. You know, that's what my mission is anyway. I could be wrong. I could be messing it up. Zengarda, welcome back.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's like when we start to think that we understand what's going on. Boy, are we off track. We're going to be in for so many surprises when this all, you know, we're like, we're shooting in the dark in so many ways when you realize.
It's like a man trying to figure out a woman. Yeah. As soon as you reckon you got him figured out, bam!
Yeah. You know, the more you know, the more you don't know, you feel, you know, you become more like a child. It's like, it's awesome, whatever it is. And it's fun trying to figure it out, but to ever think you got it figured out, boy,
I reckon one of the hallmarks of real profound intelligence is somebody admitting that they don't know everything and admitting how stupid they are.
All we are is that dust in the wind.
All we are is depleted uranium dust in the wind.
How bad are you getting it there? Does it come down that way?
I mean, oh, yeah. And even though we've got the nuclear-free zone, I don't think the particles care.
No, I don't think so either.
Apparently, we're widening our major ports as well, dredging them to bring on something that's larger than cruise ships and things like that. And I was thinking, what kind of ship is larger than a cruise ship? Aircraft carriers.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I reckon we're going to turn into a nice little South Pacific theater of operations for the U.S. military in order to project its dominance through NATO, which I think NATO is basically the world government army, really, because now New Zealand signed up to it. It's true. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, New Zealand, in the South Pacific, with its Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for Merrill Lynch and the Federal Reserve, in charge of bonds and derivatives trading, that kind of thing, goes over one weekend and signs us up to NATO. So, yeah, it comes back. Yeah, we're part of NATO now. Right. Did you skip a geography lesson, you scumbag?
It's like George Carlin says. He says, it's a club, and you're not in it. It's all, I mean, look at that. Leadership in the world today is just, you know, it's Orwellian. I don't know what you can say. It's just, but once you know, it's so obvious. But then the people who don't know they're in such a spell, like we can't give up on them, but it's, when you stand back and see it, when you see it in the daily news, it's, you're just like, I don't know, you know what I mean? It's hard to fathom the degree that they've gone. Well, it's like we're talking in the break. You know, there's this schism now. People who are moving along with the shift and getting it and, you know, elevating in the ways that they're learning whatever. And people who are resisting it are having real problems. You know, and it's getting into marriages. It's getting into families. Getting into workplaces. And, you know, it's all good. I mean, it's part of the learning process. And if it has to come to a crisis, well, we've all been through that kind of stuff. And that's usually what wakes you up.
Well, I think it's about acceptance, really. I mean, I think it might have been Mark Twain that had this old saying, when an honest man is confronted with the truth that he's wrong, he'll either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest.
Wow.
The capacity for accepting things, essentially, and acknowledging your own shortcomings, I believe, is the hallmark of a great leader. The hallmark of a really scary leader is the one who thinks he knows everything and the one that essentially might kill any messenger within his own ranks who tells him things he does not want to hear. You know, you could imagine maybe Adolf Hitler at one point there sitting over a giant table with all these armies and things like that, that they're moving to hold back the Allied advance. And wondering why the Allied advance just kept coming forward as if his troops had accomplished nothing. Because those troops didn't exist. His commanders just didn't remove the pieces from the table.
like the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah.
You know, something I wanted to say that I'm in the Woodstock generation. And anybody who's younger might notice that our generation, we went through the hippie thing and all kinds of changes. I've talked to a lot of people about this. There's sort of a calling, and I hope people don't think we're being arrogant or patronizing, but we feel like it's our duty it's to kind of pass on a perspective or information. I mean, think about this. Kids 18 and younger never saw a blue sky. They don't know what a blue sky is. They've seen, you know, slowly graying skies, you know, since they first started the program. Younger kids, it's worse. They don't realize that's not normal. I'm from the fluoride generation. They started doing fluoride. I actually went to the university where they did the fake experiments on fluoride to sell it in their white jackets. But each generation, I don't know, there's a generational sense of obligation. So if younger people sense that about people, try not to think it's being patronizing or pedantic or, you know, arrogant or anything. But you might sense it. I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of shooting out there, but I've seen this recently. I wanted people to understand that it's a real sincere calling that older people feel. And older than me, you know, I'm in my early 60s. I've, you know, we've got a whole passel of grandkids and I mean, I don't feel like that. Like my whole generation, we think we'll stay in our 20s for a while. But, you know, people older than me, 10, 20 years, they feel the same angst, the same burden to tell people, you know, to sort of give a sense of perspective. So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there for any younger people that sense that. It's not that people are trying to talk down to anybody. I mean, I can't speak that about everybody. Maybe some people are.
Well, let me cut in here because I'm a young guy, but most of the people that I talk to, just in general, not least on this radio show, are usually about twice my age. And the majority of the listeners, I think about 40% of the listenership, maybe upwards of 50%, 60%, are between the ages of 40 and 60. And I don't know about you, but I didn't know my dad all that well. As a kid, and I was really violent and suicidal, had a lot of emotional problems up through high school and that kind of thing. And I furiously started accumulating father figures to kind of correct that mistake, because I didn't want to turn out like he was, you know. My dad was a millionaire, but he only had really two or three friends that he could count on to really do anything for him, because he's such a bastard to them, to everybody else. Says where I want to be is I want to have two or three bucks in the bank, but a million people would do anything for me.
You're right. It's about loving. I mean, I had the same thing. My dad was a very arrogant, cold authority figure. So it gave me authority figure issues my whole life. And, you know, you're always trying to get that acceptance, that pat on the back and all that. It really screws with your head. But it drove me, you know, it drove me to search for spiritual things and all that. But, I forget what I was going to say. But coming from that kind of a background, you know, it has its place. Oh, I was going to say, if I was a kid today, they would have me on so many drugs. I was a squirmer. I went to school. I'd play sports after school, and then I'd drum for 4 hours in the evening. Then I'd squirm all night, get up, run, play sports. You couldn't stop me. And I've got wonderful grandkids. They're beautiful. They're full of life. And they want to put them on drugs. It's, you know, and thank God my oldest daughter, she was in the Bay Area in California, famous for all of its political correctness, as well as people who fight against it. But they said, you have to put your child on these drugs. And she went down there and gave him hell. And they backed off. But they are insisting, and they're forcing it. I mean, 25 to 35 vaccines before the age of 5. What do you expect these kids to be like? And they're beautiful. They're the kids that are coming to this planet. There's a whole generation that, if you look at them, there's something special. You know, the young people today, people should not lose hope. These kids are, there's a really good generation of, I don't know what it is. They call them crystal kids and indigo children and all that. But, you know, there's a beautiful thing happening, and that's why they're trying to hold them down.
See, I thought it was more like crystal meth kids and Wendigo children.
it's a fight. You know, have a look what they're going to have to fight through, you know? I mean, they got all of us now have these DNA battles going on. You know, our natural DNA versus the junk that they're, I mean, they got nanoparticles in the chemtrails, no joke. I mean, they're putting it in the food. They're putting much stranger things than, I mean, to genetically modify something is one thing, but when they start injecting crazy, crazy stuff that they're experimenting on, you know, we're going to see some weird stuff. But we can't give up the ship.
Well, to what corner are you going to allow yourself to be backed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people have been talking about this whole violent revolution thing. So, do anything you can to avoid war. Anything. Yeah. Okay, regardless of how hard or difficult or adverse you might be to it, to not initiate violence is probably the best thing you could really do for anybody. The difficulty is once other people initiate it against you, if you don't retaliate or defend yourself, you're a slave. You're giving appeasement to tyrants. Yeah. And the only way people can ever wake up to this kind of reality and start becoming active, start doing the right thing, invariably is because somebody's actively done the wrong thing to them. And they spend the rest of their life in opposition to that, trying to correct the balance, essentially. Yeah. If you get messed around as a child, you have two choices. You can either mess up your kids, or you can spend a good portion of your life trying to correct that mistake so that you don't perpetuate it. And I think many generations have been subverted step by step into getting to this generation here. What are we at now? Generation X, Z, Y, whatever. I consider myself a part of the Y generation because I keep asking that question. Why? Why are you messing everything up? Why are they putting fluoride in the water? Why are they GMOing everything? Why is McDonald's cheaper for me to eat than a nice prepared family meal at a restaurant that has proper food and nutrition? Why is everything that I ever maybe once enjoyed as a child, perhaps, you know, some kind of a freedom or cheap gas or cheap electricity, being able to actually leave a heater on all night so that you don't wake up freezing, you know? Why? And we know why.
Yeah.
Because freedom is dangerous.
That's right.
And the only way that you can ensure people's security, ironically, is to ensure that people have freedom. If you don't have freedom, if somebody can come in and kill you for no reason whatsoever, and just because they've got a uniform, get off with it, and you're not free. You're not secure. And no matter how many times they need more black uniforms thugs to protect you, you're still not going to be free. You're going to be just worse off every single day. And it must stop.